Hey,
Merry Christmas, everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm Jack Rowland, and this is In Too Deep. Today, I chat with the insanely talented digital artist, Andy Thomas. Andy's been making highly detailed digital masterpieces inspired by the natural world for a couple of decades now. His grand and majestic trees seem to depict an undisturbed alien natural world, similar to our own, revealing psychedelic microcosms of fungus, corals, bioluminescence, and floating particles within their intricate root systems. As well as these, Andy also creates incredible animations of explosive abstract shapes and forms inspired by sound recordings from the natural world. His works are a staple within Australia's psychedelic music festival culture and has shown his works in arts and projection festivals all over the world. His work is so magical and incredibly unique. Please welcome Andy Thomas.
Is there a point to all this?
I think we're getting in too deep.
You don't apply.
Bad luck.
Oh, I have one speed, I have one gear. Go, 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 go.
I'll tell you when we're getting into deep, too deep,
deep. Andy Thomas, how are you?
Hi, good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Merry Christmas.
Indeed.
I really appreciate you kind of coming down on such a, you know, such hectic time of the year.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's great.
Have you you got much planned for the Chrissy break, or you just...
Nothing at all.
Great.
Being awesome. Relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So is this a hectic time of year for you? Or
no,
relaxing?
No. No. Nice right. And relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had a hectic year, so.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
Lots of work, lots of stuff going on. So awesome. It's good to have a break.
Yeah, yeah. Nice one. What exactly has been kind of going on?
Look, the NFT stuff has kind of kicked off a lot.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. So that's a lot of my work is commissioned NFTs now, which is really cool.
Yeah.
It's a really exciting kind of industry. Been doing a bit of commercial work lately too. So I don't really do much commercial work, but if the company's kind of values are aligned, you know,
right.
I'll do one here and there. So a bit of that kind of stuff. And I want to get back into my own artwork a bit too. So I haven't been posting much lately, and I've been kind of just too busy to focus on my own work. So I can't wait to kind of get back, stuck back into all that stuff again.
Yeah. I've been a bit the same. I've been doing like lots of kind of, you know, mural jobs in here, which aren't totally in line with like always the work that I particularly want to make. So super excited to start another body of work. And
it's refreshing to have nothing, just to do your own thing, isn't it?
Hey man, I've been a massive fan of yours for years. I think the first time I came across your work was, it was either Rainbow Serpent or Shine On Festival. Did you show stuff at Shine On?
I probably showed stuff at Shine On, but I didn't go to that one.
Yeah,
I think I've been to almost every festival. I've been to all the rainbows except a couple. But
oh wow!
I heard all about the Shine On, and it wasn't really shining on so
it
much.
It definitely wasn't. It was flooding on. Yeah. It was fucking hectic. The second one was really, really good actually.
Yeah,
but
I
don't think it quite recovered from the trauma of the first one of just the epic rain and. It was an interesting weekend that, but
I think my artwork's been to more festivals than I have.
Yeah,
so,
great.
Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, no, I was I think when I first went to Rainbow and around that time, that was kind of a very influential time in my life. That was the first kind of like psychedelic intake I'd really had. It was the first kind of welcome to the psychedelic community. I didn't even really know it existed. And I remember me and one of my mates at night, I think we were pretty loaded up on mushrooms, and we came into some art tent and saw your amazing trees that were printed on vinyl. And
awesome.
I mean, we would have just been the perfect customers ever, because we were high as hell, young, super enthusiastic, and we're putting on these kind of like 3D glasses, watching the lights change. And I was just like, just take my money. I was just like, I want to buy that, and also I want the lights and I want the glasses. Woke up the next morning with like half my festival budget blown, but
that's awesome.
But
people get lost in my work, and I get lost in my own work. So it does translate well to festivals, and people are kind of high and they're just like, wow, look at this, and look at this world, and look at that face there. And people see a lot of faces and stuff in my work,
right.
And I never intend to put faces in there, but maybe it's some kind of like human,
pattern
predisposition to,
Mm.
It's usually faces and genitals.
Yeah, right.
That's what
I haven't ever gotten either of those, but, yeah. But hey.
It's an evolutionary cool. thing, I think.
It's like a inkblot test kind of thing. Yeah. Choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
I mean, those trees that you used to do, I mean, one thing about your works is like they are just so insanely detailed. And I've seen you kind of a lot of, you know, you do drawings and things, all I guess from your kind of, I guess from your imagination, taking bits and bobs from here or there. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much there's so much information in there. It's just a feast for the eyes. You can really get lost in these works.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this idea of like worlds within worlds and like fractal theory where you zoom in on something and you keep seeing more stuff and I feel like the universe has got some kind of, that's something going on there. It's like you see galaxies and they kind of look like hurricanes. There's all these repeating patterns in things, you know. And I was talking about this with someone the other day actually, and it's like if you have just say the Milky Way galaxy, right? And then you zoom out, that will be in a supercluster of galaxies. And then all those galaxies are in filaments. So the entire universe has got this pattern of like filaments. And it looks exactly the same as a brain. And when you take the structure of a brain and then you look at the structure of the galaxy, you can actually Google it and you can, I think there's like a picture you can see. It's like side by side and... Yeah, I think that's super interesting, you know.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, I mean, just microcosms within these macrocosms within your tree. And, yeah, I was actually thinking about this kind of your work and then comparing it to things like the structure of the universe as we know it and how much technology actually lends itself to us understanding ourselves and, totally. And our world around us to be able to even try and replicate a universe just makes it accessible to the non-scientifically minded person and we
definitely
just take that so for granted.
Yeah, and the James Webb Space Telescope is going up soon, like a few days time.
I haven't heard about this. What's this?
Yeah, so the Hubble Space Telescope is the the big one that's gotten all these awesome images. But in a few days time, this James Webb is going up, and that's like 100 times more powerful. So it's going to be able to see right back in time, you know, by picking up infrared, X-ray. It's super exciting, and it might be able to tell like chemical structures of planets around other stars and stuff. So it might find aliens.
You never know.
Yeah. Unless the rocket blows up on launch there.
Yeah. Oh, man, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Oh, but far out.
In my art, I often use a lot of Hubble Space Telescope images. You know, I'll just like pepper some of the like spots with stars, you know. So you zoom right in, you see these like worlds of like this light glowing in this little spot, and it's got like a solar system like going around it and stuff. And I'm super fascinated by that.
Yeah. Man, how long do these images take you to make? I mean, there's so much information in there.
Yeah, everyone asks that question. Usually about like 6 weeks, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter. Like I'm experimenting a little bit last couple of years doing some really fast things, which are kind of different looking, but the trees usually take about 6 weeks.
Right.
And sometimes I need to step away from them a bit too. It's really difficult when you work on the one image for so long, you kind of get blind to it. You know what I mean? You can't see it anymore. You're just like, yeah. So I'm sure you're familiar with that. Yeah. So, you know, I either have to step away from it for a while or, you know, smoke some weed or something and get a different perspective.
Sure.
Yeah. I think that helps a little bit, you know. And some of them obviously are more successful than others, but I'm always critical of my work. But
Any good artist is?
Yeah.
I mean, do you ever get, because I assume you are making these three-dimensional worlds on the computer, these digital worlds. So when you're making, I guess, one of these kind of trees, for example, do you ever get paralyzed by just something as basic as where should the camera be? Where is the best place to kind of show off this elaborate structure that's filled with detail? Because every movement
you're
losing. With the
trees, where I start, I usually start with a photo that I've taken. Right. So I'll go on I used to go on expeditions and take photos of nature, like forests and stuff like that around the world. So I'll find a image that I really like that I've taken a photo of, and then the perspective in that photo dictates how the image is going to turn out as far as the camera angle goes and stuff, you know. So that's why a lot of the time, like, they're long and skinny, because the photo is like this central point usually, and then if the camera was going to match the perspective, then you're kind of looking down and you're looking up, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. It's yeah, it's kind of like a curved camera that's flattened out, if that makes any sense. I'm not really describing that well.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, like a, yeah, you know, fisheye lens or something like that. You know, like, yeah.
Kind of like a vertical panorama.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep. Awesome. Exactly. Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, you've been doing this for a long time. It seems like your style has been refined for a very long time as well. What was your... Did you... study, or what was your kind of entry point into your creative practice, and just kind of, I guess, even your understanding of technology, being able to use digital technology the way you do?
Like, obviously I was into drawing and stuff when I was a little kid. I guess when I was like 12, 13, I was into graffiti and like the Melbourne graffiti scene. And I never
were you
did
doing?
Any.
Yeah.
I never did any. I was too young. I was like,
I was the same. I was just a little fanboy.
But
fan
I had my
boy.
Heroes, you know, like Paris in Peril and like WCA crew and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, you can see a little bit of that in my work sometimes, you know, there's a bit of that reflected. But then about 5 years later, like, I don't know, like 17, 18, I started getting into raves and... I think there was a connection between the graffiti scene and the rave scene a little bit. Like, some of the graff kind of dudes kind of started getting involved in that scene as well.
Was that early 2000s or kind of 90s?
Nah, early 90s.
Because the 90s rave aesthetic is so different. I mean, you've got all the kind of, you know, white Nike caps and the white beaters and the trackies.
it was such an awesome time, man. Mm. It was really good. No one really knew about it, you know, it was underground, and like everyone got the information from radio shows, something like Triple R and PBS and stuff, and call like a 0055 number on the night to find out where the party was. And so I started doing like UV paintings for some of these parties. I guess that's kind of where I started, really. And then, you know, met lots of people in that scene and started doing flyers for some parties and stuff, and Rainbow Serpent and that. I did like the first Rainbow Serpent flyer, was one of my early flyers. Yeah.
Oh, sick. I have to find that.
Yeah. It was a collaboration between me and a friend. So he did the typography and I did the imagery and stuff. And then I met all that crew, Frank and those guys, became friends with them and started doing flyers and kind of started making a living just doing flyers at that point. That was like the early 2000s now. I learned a bit of stuff at uni. I did a graphic design course at Monash, but that didn't really, I don't know, I didn't really teach me much. I kind of taught myself most software stuff, but it gave me a good introduction to Photoshop. So I started teaching myself 3D stuff after that and was able to integrate my Photoshop photography and 3D skills together and start exploring things in my own mind, in my own imagination. Started doing like stuff overseas, like festival galleries and stuff like that, and expanded. Now I'm doing lots of different stuff. Animation kind of stuff takes up a lot of my time these days. So
did the technology side always come pretty naturally to you? Or
I think so.
Yep.
I've got such a vivid imagination. You know, I can't ever stop thinking about like visions in my mind and stuff. And
really? Yeah.
It's what I create digitally is about as close as I can get. It's the tool that gets me the closest to what's in my imagination, but it's never as good as my imagination.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is your, cause I think I read somewhere that you see sounds.
Mm.
Is that right?
Yeah, in my imagination.
Yeah.
So, in like, I'm not walking around the street when I,
yep,
and,
sure, know,
birds are chirping and I'm seeing colors in my vision. Like, but if I close my eyes, I listen to music or sounds or whatever, I get really clear kind of structures and shapes and textures and in my imagination. It's very clear. And again, like, you know, the animations I do are kind of like a, I don't know, a dumb version of what I see in my imagination. You know, it's like, it's never as good. So, you know, the more I learn about the 3D software, the closer I can get to it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Have you always kind of been that way? Like, as,
yeah,
as
I think so.
Young? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, what a superpower.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah. I guess a part of me is like, you know, don't other people see that or something, or I don't know what other people see in their imagination. But I think going to raves and trance parties and stuff and just being on the dance floor, and you know what it's like, and I'm just hearing the music on a massive scale and just getting right into, like, closing my eyes and just seeing these, like, structures in my mind. Like, I think it was the music that sparked it off. It was electronic music that really sparked it off, you know. Yeah, like, I see it like this layered kind of three-dimensional structure that's like on the horizon, like this ginormous, like a almost like a tornado or something, but it's got light coming out of it, and there's like beats and like stuff like on the ground, like mixing up sand and dirt, and like just very cinematic, you know.
Wow.
Like, yeah, yeah, maybe movies have kind of, you know, all that
assisted stuff. Yeah,
it's probably influenced it a bit too.
Oh, yeah. That's so cool, man. Did it take you a while to kind of figure out how to, you know, actualize that kind of stuff? Because I'm a bit the same. I hate admitting this, but sometimes I will have ideas and I just don't know what to do with them. You know, I'm a painter. I you know, kind of paint semi-realistic stuff. And but
so when you say that, when you have ideas, you don't know how to put them down into reality on a
I mean, I think that's kind of what I love so much about your drawings. You can actually see these kind of creatures that are inspired by plants, insects, animals, and maybe even alien kind of structures, but they all look like you've used a reference, you know. They're very well you know, detailed and light sourced and everything like that. You know, that doesn't come naturally to everyone. It doesn't come naturally to me. I'm very good at drawing something that I see in front of me, but actually pushing that into the next level and creating things that don't exist and making them look good.
I've always drawn from my imagination. Like 90% of what I do is just drawn from my imagination. Every now and then, for certain things, I'll get some reference and look at some photography and, you know, different photos of animals and stuff and reference those in drawings and yeah, but most of it just, that's always come naturally to me, is just drawing from my imagination, you know.
Were you ever fascinated or did scientific illustrations, was that ever?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was I can't remember what era, I think it was like the 18th century or something, this guy called Ernst Haeckel. I don't know if you've heard of him before.
Is he the guy?
I'm not sure if there's any particular guy, but he's definitely, I'm sure people have heard of him. He does these really intricate kind of drawings of like all different plants and insects, and definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, I'll definitely check him out.
Yeah.
And I was my wife Yuri, she did a course on scientific illustration, and she was kind of, part of the course was explaining that why scientific illustrations are kind of superior to photography, or for example, in like, you know, I guess, nature books or anything, because you can, you can get way more information that doesn't rely on angle or blurring, or you can actually just put far more information in an illustration than any photo can really.
Totally,
do.
Especially if something's really small.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Although there are some pretty crazy, like, microscopic cameras and stuff these days. You can get some pretty incredible stuff out of.
Yeah.
I've seen some amazing kind of photography like that. But, yeah, definitely. Yeah, when it comes to scientific illustration, it's all about accuracy, isn't it? And it's all about depicting reality in its most pure kind of form. I think what I do kind of deviates away from that
yeah.
a bit, but it's good to get, you know, reference from these things. And sometimes I'll create things that are almost like a Frankenstein monster of like
yeah.
the various things jumbled together and still looks beautiful in some way. You know, I like that idea of things that are beautiful, but also kind of maybe scary or a little bit too. Like, you know, when you see a snake or something and it's like, it's beautiful, but it's super scary. I quite like that, you know, interplay. Like nature's really good at that.
I've seen a few of your drawings and animations and stuff where you use these. They look inspired by possibly spiders' legs. They're quite long and they have that creepy wraparound feel that is long and spiky and to be avoided. But those are the ones that I'm always drawn to the most.
They're cool.
Exactly that. They're alien. They're scary. They're but weirdly attractive.
yeah. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's so much out there. It's like, God, it's like nature's almost thought of everything in some way. Like it's so hard to think of an alien that isn't just a combination of something in nature already, you know, apart from like a cloud of gas or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like what is there that you can think of that isn't already on Earth? It's really hard to wrap your head around.
Have you seen or read that book Color Out of Space? That was the it was a cool Nicolas Cage actually new film, but it was a
right, awesome.
An alien. I think a comet hits and the alien takes form as a new color, kind of like a gas, but it's a color that no one's
a new color
is. See, kind
that's
of a concept.
Hard to get your head around,
and it's a bit like
unless you've had DMT and then you can get an idea of what something yeah. it's like not a color you've seen before.
But then it starts manipulating and everything's biology, kind of like that Annihilation movie. I'm not sure if you've seen that.
Oh, that's
either.
Amazing. Yep. Yeah.
Very similar theme.
Yeah. Everyone says that movie looks like my artwork in many ways and stuff. It was really awesome to see.
Oh, visual feast, wasn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Especially when that dude's all strung up on the wall with like fungal mushrooms coming out of him.
There's a really cool scene at the end too. It's like, I think it's like his eye or something like going in like black hole or something like. Yeah, very cool.
Has sci-fi been a... Are you a keen...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally.
Have there been any that have really just...
I don't know. Gee, that's a hard question. There's so many good sci-fi movies. Obviously, Aliens and stuff was some of the first ones that I really enjoyed. You know, the old Star Wars and all that, really cool. And I struggle with questions like that because I'll get home and I'll just have a whole stack of, you know, awesome... examples I can remember that I can't think of off the top of my head.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
Yeah, I like Guy, you know, Geiger's obviously amazing. You know, his art and stuff has been an inspiration. Tapping into some of the things we were talking about before with like insects and kind of darkness and beauty and like wrapped together and but what else? Yeah, can't really think.
That's fine. You're kind of saying before trying to imagine an alien, nature's kind of done everything. They've kind of, it's morphed and evolved into every bizarre shape, which makes me, leads me to want to ask you about your trip to the Amazon. I saw some of the photos that you've done. I think that's probably, Borneo as well, I saw some of your photographs. It just seems that is a place where nature seems, particularly in the insect world, has no limits.
Oh, it's crazy. Borneo is amazing. It's just... there's plants that look like insects and insects that look like plants and they're just kind of everywhere, you know. I haven't been for many years. I think it was like last time I went was like 2008 or something, but I'm sure it's, you know, lost a lot of its forests since then.
Yeah.
I remember flying That's over sad. On the way there and I was reading a National Geographic about Borneo and it was talking about palm oil and plantations and stuff like that. And I was looking down out of the plane and I could see, you know, these patchworks of just deforestation as I was flying over. So it's quite full on. The Amazon trip was amazing. I was doing a artist in residency in Finland. So I went from Finland to Brazil, which was a real bizarre culture shock, you know, people, climate, everything together. Luckily, I had a guide to show me around. So I went to Manaus, which is kind of in the middle of the Amazon. which is a pretty rough city. I'm sure some people have been there before. It's kind of like Mad Max, you know.
I've never been to this part of the world.
There's like slums and corrugated iron and stuff everywhere. And as soon as you get out of the city, it's beautiful jungle and it's incredible. But I think being there on my own would have been quite intimidating.
Mm.
But having a guide to show me around, and he took me to various places north of Manaus.
That's Brazil, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm. yeah. And we went to – there's this bird of paradise that is only in this one certain spot, and he took us there. It was amazing. It was really amazing. They're like bright orange with this like orange crest that goes over the top. And yeah, so it's like, you know, I watch a lot of nature documentaries, but it was amazing to, you know, go. It's amazing to go to some of these places in person, you know, and see this stuff in person rather than just on TV, you know.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference to how you see things. And
so you just went over by yourself.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Into the middle of the jungle.
Yeah. I remember on the plane flying to Manaus thinking, what am I doing? What am I doing here?
Had you sorted out the guide on the way before you arrived?
Yeah. I was just on the street. Can someone help me? No, I worked that part out. I had a friend in Rio, so he knew this guy in Manaus, and the guy in Manaus who showed me around, he didn't really speak much English. He did speak a little bit English, but so there was a, you know, it wasn't easy, but it worked. So
how long did you spend in the Amazon with this guy?
About 3 weeks.
Oh, wow. Cool. Yeah. And were you mostly just camping in the
I was staying in just a hotel in Manaus, and then we'd go on trips up. And I stayed in another, there was another small kind of guest house further north as well in this, what was it called? Pierre Figueiredo. I can't remember the name of the, Presidente Figueiredo was the name of the town further north.
So yeah, okay.
Obviously it was named after some ex-president or something.
Yep.
Didn't do my research on the history, but, yeah, so I didn't rough it. I wasn't going right into the jungle with tents and stuff like that. Mm. So maybe next time I would like to go further into the jungle. And
that would be a dream trip of mine. I would love to go over there and just immerse myself in it.
Totally. There's so many amazing birds around. And it's incredible. Just like you go to the zoo and you see like these massive macaws and huge big birds, and they're just flying around everywhere.
Just around.
Yeah.
I often think that about just living in Australia, where how lucky we are for birds. I mean,
it's got definitely
beautiful parrots everywhere. Just the lorikeets that fly around. I mean, totally. And the rosellas and just everything. Like, just totally take
even
that
down
Merritt
Creek here. It's like there's heaps of really cool, interesting bird life.
I felt like a lot came out during particularly the first lockdown when everyone really locked in. I felt like the bird life around here was really was doing well.
Maybe it was the silence. Maybe you finally got some silence and you could hear the birds and you're like,
probably. We had kookaburras landing on like the roof just over there. It's just like, what the fuck?
Awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah.
They got so much personality, don't they?
Totally. They just look like blokes.
Yeah.
They look like so many Aussie animals just look like Aussie blokes.
Yeah.
Like kangaroos and kookaburras. I don't know. Anyway.
I don't see that myself. But
okay. Put a wife beater on a kangaroo. I reckon it would look pretty spot on. So when you go to, you go to the Amazon and was this just a trip that you obviously, I'm sure every trip you figure out a way to feedback into your art.
Yeah.
But was this just a trip you wanted to do, or was this a specific trip that you were like an art expedition?
Art expedition.
Right. What do you take with you?
Not much, like my camera and some low budget audio recording equipment, just Tascam audio.
Yep.
Like there's only so much I can carry as well. Mm. Like, again, you know, if I was going to do a full on proper expedition, I'd probably, you know, have someone helping me a bit more and have more equipment and stuff like that. But you do the best you can sometimes, you know, and, like just basically getting photos mostly, you know, as well. So yeah, which I can use in my both my animation work and my 2D stuff. So
So are you using photographic references in your animations? So, or are you just building sometimes, based on? Right.
Yeah, sometimes I'll use it for lighting, environment lighting and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay.
It's the animation stuff's mostly, it's very hard to integrate real footage and animation together. Like that's, it's super complicated to do it right, or else it kind of looks stuck on, you know. There's a lot of post-production kind of stuff you need to do in order for it to look right, you know. So I generally avoid that. You know, some commercial work requires that, you know, and that's always a struggle. But I generally avoid that, and I just make everything in 3D these days. And I do a little bit of post stuff in After Effects, you know. As I learn more about 3D software, I do less and less post work and do most of it in Houdini and get most of it from that. Yeah.
How do you feel after, you know, going deep into an expedition into the middle of the jungle, seeing animals that most people will never see in their life? Does that really kind of invigorate you creatively?
Totally.
Was there any particular things that you that just blew your mind when you were there?
It all blew my mind, really. I think it's the ecosystems and how kind of like integrated they are, and like that when you're there in the jungle, it really gives you that idea of it. You know, it's everything is, it's like one big living organism, you know. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. I think with the inspiration, again, going back to what we were talking about before with seeing sounds, like I'll hear bird sounds and I'll see them in my mind's eye. I'll see what they look like. And it's been good for me to strip back my work as well, because of all my earlier stuff is super detailed. These bird sound animations were a lot more stripped back into just basic kind of structures and light flashes and kind of textures and just simplified more, you know. It felt good to simplify things down and just make just this raw kind of beautiful shape describing the sound, you know.
Well, it's a whole different function, you know, those animations that respond to bird sounds, I think. And I think they're super interesting to kind of watch. I was really curious as to how you get those quick movements and motions that do respond to sound. Are you playing around with those? I mean, are these kind of program settings that are kind of linked with this audio that you're feeding into it, or are you actually kind of playing around with like VR motion or?
No, that's something I'd like to do though in the future. I get the waveform from the sound and then plug it into Houdini's channel operator, and then that can activate, so you can export the waveform to trigger certain aspects. You could almost anything, any aspect within Houdini, you can use this operator to activate. So particle size or like, you know, timing of things and stuff. So what I do is I have a combination of hand keying stuff and using the audio to trigger stuff. So it's not all triggered by the audio. It's a combination of both.
Right.
And sometimes I'll have to go into the audio and like, get rid of noise in the background, or like just get snippets. Like if a bird, you know, has a song, I'll go as far as grabbing each individual part of that song separate, you know, make it separate, and then pipe them all in as, you know, five sound pieces that make up the one song, you know what I mean, in order to make it as accurate as I can. Because sometimes the audio within the audio reaction stuff within the 3D software, it can be a little bit haphazard and hazy. You know, you can't just plug a sound in and expect it to do something. You know, you've got to kind of chop it up and stick it back together again. So there's a lot of that goes on. Sometimes I'll even slow it down to like a slow it down 50% and then trigger it slowed down, and then in post speed it back up again,
right? You know?
And that helps too, because then you can kind of, things will be a bit smoother, you know, rather than particles flying off. Like if there's too much physics and motion involved in something, then the physics in the software will, things will explode, you know. So okay. Yeah, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. so much experimenting, man.
Science.
Yeah. Scientist. I just experiment so much of my work is just like me sitting there for a week just experimenting with things and not getting any results, just that works that way and now that didn't work. You know, I spend 2 days on something and it doesn't work and then, you know, I have to change tacks and
yeah. How do you kind of keep up with it all? I mean, are you having to when you're just trying things, are you documenting every step of the way? Of
like, I'm cool, too I chaotic that. For that.
That's what I mean. Like, because
I wish I did do that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that would have to just be kind of intuitive, I'm sure. And then, that's my Photoshop understanding is super limited. But yeah. I always kick myself when I come up with something really nice, and then I have to recreate it later, and I can't remember how I got there.
The repetition thing is how you learn stuff. What I generally do is I'll learn a tutorial and then I'll create a project based on this tutorial I've learned and so then I'm just doing the same thing every day over and over again and I just remember it because I've just done this repetitive thing over and over again for a week or something and that really helps learning. But it's so challenging with especially the 3D stuff. There's so many curveballs all the time. There's like some thing that doesn't work or there's some error here and then you've got to Google something to work out why is it doing this and get on forums and it's complicated stuff. It's not for the faint-hearted. Like you've got to be dedicated, you know. You can't just expect that you're going to, you know, jump on there and create something good in 6 months and that's that, you know. It takes years of like just sticking with it, you know.
Yeah. Man, I mean, and even just kind of getting into the sound aspect of your work, because I mean, now with these animations, sound, it's so reliant on sound. So did sound design, have you kind of just been, you know, playing with these different kind of programs throughout, or do you actually get to a bit of a roadblock where you're like, no, this needs sound, and now I actually have to learn an entire different medium, an entire different art form?
Yeah, there's a bit of that.
Just to aid this,
Yeah, sometimes it'll... something will be sound based, so I'll begin that project knowing that it's a sound based project. And other times, I'll create something and then think of sounds that would go with it, you know. And like you said, you know, go back and kind of work out. But you know, I don't know. I'm not any kind of expert with sound. You know, it's like I'm complete amateur with sound stuff. You know, I've learned the real basics, and that's enough to, you know, do something good. I'd like to potentially in the future kind of learn some more stuff about sound, you know, but there's only so much one person can do.
Totally. That's what I mean. I mean, keeping up with technology must be a full-time job in itself.
It's just so
fast developing and things.
Totally.
Like we kind of mentioned before, the virtual reality is on the rise and even augmented reality and things. And
just keeping up with the software is challenging in itself. And then there's the hardware side of things too, which I'm no expert at either. You know, I'm no computer geek with hardware stuff. Like, so, you know, it's... I think sometimes you have to put the brakes on a bit too and not worry about the latest update of Houdini or this and that and just focus on something that you know well and do that for a while and craft that too, you know, or else you can just get, you're just in a mess. Like,
So you work, you know, we've spoken a lot about how much nature, the natural world, is just so important to your creative process and things. I'm wondering, you know, kind of going back to festival culture origins and stuff, was the kind of, have psychedelic culture been at all like important, or even psychedelics or plant medicines in the kind of development of your aesthetics, or is it just a matter that the format of your work lends itself so well to the kind of festival culture, the psychedelic culture? It's really been embraced by a lot of people in that culture.
I think it's more the latter, really. It's never about psychedelics, my work. It's more about nature and technology and evolution and things like that. But it goes beautifully with psychedelics and, you know, I have inspiration from psychedelics too, definitely, you know. But I don't I never really have a psychedelic experience and then create something
right
that's looking like that. Mm. Except a new piece I've done just recently is that. It's probably the first time I've really done that. So that'll be out soon, coming days
wonderful.
Or something.
Wonderful. Yeah.
But that's almost the first time I've really kind of tried to create something that was my vision in that world. Mm. It's usually just seems to lend itself to that. Yeah. You know? So,
I mean, that's the thing, like looking at what psychedelic art was back in the 60s and 70s. I mean, you can kind of call anything psychedelic art these days if it's not too hard-edged and serious, you know.
Well,
you
that's
know
right. I mean?
Yeah.
Totally.
There's not really one psychedelic aesthetic anymore.
Yeah, there's still a kind of a cliche. I guess you see like, you know, mandalas and... Mm. You know, various
portrait,
other
third eye.
Yeah, all that. Yeah, I've always steered clear of that. I still appreciate artists that do that kind
Same.
Of stuff.
Yep.
But that's not really my thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like it's certainly a really cool culture as well. And I think there's some really switched on people in, you know, there's definitely some inspiration from a lot of artists in the psychedelic world, like Robert Venosa and people like that. And
I know the name. I can't picture the work. But
yeah, he's not alive anymore. But right. I met him at Boom Festival in 2004, and his work is really amazing, you know. And it's all about that world, you know, psychedelic world and connection with spirit and stuff like that. Mm. And you really see it in his work, so... Yeah, I encourage anyone to, you know, check his stuff out. And,
yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
Have there been any of these expeditions that you've done, because I've seen you've been to so many amazing places, Iceland, you said Finland, a lot of Southeast Asia. Has there been any trip that's really kind of resonated with you, or any particular style of landscape that just you're like, yep, that sings to me, that reaches me the most?
I think... Not really. Like, I just love it all, really. Like, you know, I'm keen on forests and different forests and ecosystems around the world. But going to Iceland, you know, there's no forest there. There's a couple of tiny
difference.
Shrubs and stuff. But there are, like, this tiny little forest, but it's pretty much just no trees at all. And it's so inspiring. It's so incredible. It's
amazing.
You've been there?
No, but had planned on doing a artist residency years ago, and just, I mean, I've made many plans that have gone nowhere, but another one that I'd love to.
That was amazing. That trip was just these towering mountains coming up out.
It's just harsh.
Flat, and then all of a sudden it's just like massive towering mountains and really interesting geological features. And there's one spot that was like this plain of like moss. It's like it stretched on for miles. It was like... It was almost like felt like you were underwater. You know, like all these boulders were all covered in this layer of moss, and it's like sponge. You walk across, it's like spongy moss.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's really unique.
Yeah.
I guess that's got something to do with the volcanic soil or something. And
With your work being so nature themed and so inspired by nature and technology is, I don't know, that there's an argument to make that technology is part of nature, you know.
Totally.
Ants build ant mounds, birds construct nests, and we build computers and skyscrapers and stuff. But also there's an argument to be made that technology is the opposite of nature, you know, particularly when it gets to a place where it's harming nature, which is happening. Are these kind of themes, your relationship with the natural world and technology to explore and recreate and demonstrate, are these themes things that you think about a lot?
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. This is a lot of the backbone of my work, I think. Mm. I'm not sure if you've heard of what an extended phenotype is.
Nope.
So... this guy, Richard Dawkins, he's a scientist, professor.
The God Delusion author.
So he's explored this idea. And when you look at a bird and it makes a bird's nest, so that's an extended phenotype. So it's like this natural creation that's an extension of the living creature. Mm. So, and I see technology like that. So a computer is an exotic extended phenotype in some ways. And I think we are, as a species, we're heading this way. You know, you look at Elon Musk's Neuralink thing.
Super interested to see where that goes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It could be our savior or our demise. Who knows if it gets embraced.
These things always start out as a medical thing, you know, it's to help people. And then it can get corrupted and it can go to dark places, I guess. And that's interesting kind of sci-fi world. And I think we are, as a species, we're heading in this direction of becoming at one with the technology and creating new life forms from our technology, which is kind of fascinating to think about. And I guess if you want to fast forward further into the future, the artificial life forms that we make will be making artificial life forms of their own.
Right. So is that life?
Yes.
If something can be freed of biology, replicating, keep improving.
It's fascinating.
And then even they go another step further, they could start experimenting with growing creatures biology-based.
Exactly. Totally. It's crazy. Already there's AI teaching AI, you know.
Right.
So it's already happening. So, and then, you know, we can put all the laws we want onto things, like let's not let the, you know, technology do this or that, but you're going to get some state actors and non-state actors in the future that are going to use this stuff for nefarious purposes. And that's going to be really bizarre to watch that happen. And there's going to be all these crazy laws and people trying to stop things happening. And
did you ever watch the Animatrix? They kind of animated this.
No.
I think it was just after the original Matrix was made. They made
right.
A lot of it was kind of anime style.
Right.
And it just kind of, it was really great. It was, I liked it more than the sequels, but it just kind of went into different, the back lore and when the war on robots happened.
Awesome.
And them having to trial robots and things and things like that. It was just really, really fun concepts that were put into these little short animated mini films, effectively.
Cool. But it's fascinating, isn't it? It makes you want, I guess all that stuff makes you question what reality even is and all of that. You know, that's a real, you know, interesting dark tunnel to go down, like simulation theory and all that kind of thing.
What do you reckon of that?
Well,
I just can't.
If you can't measure it, then what does it even matter?
Yeah.
That's kind of the point I get to, but it's still fascinating. But are we ever even going to know that it's a simulation? And if we can't ever know, then does it even matter? I don't know.
Right. Are we just complicating it even further?
Yeah. And are we, you know, is that simulation in a simulation itself? And then how far down does that go? Or are we the start of it and we're about to? Because we probably will. And, you know, all this meta and all this stuff, it looks kind of hack it now. But you see some of the stuff that Unreal Engine's doing with recreating reality. Like there's a new Matrix. A friend showed me this new Matrix thing.
The game?
Yeah.
What's it called again?
It looks so real.
Oh, man. It's insane.
Incredible. Yeah. And it's using all this AI kind of generated stuff. So it's like, you know, everything will be like when you go to, you know, interact with something, all of a sudden it's not a proxy anymore. It's a real thing. And it uses all this kind of artificial technology to it's incredible how realistic it is.
Mm.
So we, you know, if we're not in a simulation, we will certainly create a simulation, you know?
Yeah.
And then you start to think about human rights. Do human rights exist in that world too? Like do we, if we create a world that's so real and the things that are living in that world think that they're real and then we torture them, is that mean to these things? We're going to have all these different kind of questions that we have to answer in this new world.
Absolutely.
Coming up. Yeah.
I've got a buddy called Spencer Rose and he made a video game called Hurt World, I believe it's called. Anyway, he's created this amazing studio that's a cube with projectors on every angle, and but he's been playing with these kind of particle, I don't even know what to call it. It's basically these it's playing with, I guess, replicated laws of physics to play with particles that will make them create these beautiful shapes and things, but they're all based on laws. And I guess that's very similar to what you do with your animations. And they look like viruses. They look like viruses or blood streams and things. And that's been a big topic whenever I'm around there. You're just like, well, if every single one of those particles was aware, I mean, do you get a God complex being in charge? Tweaking one little number and everything changes. It turns into chaos and then it will find its own way. And he's got no control over the way it actually looks. It creates beautiful things.
I'll have to check it out.
Send
me some links and stuff. Yeah.
But when you're creating your own worlds, do you feel like you're creating? You are the god of this dimension that only you.
Not really. Yeah. But it's I just delve into it. I guess I just right into the.
Is technology getting close to that where you could actually start creating, extending those laws of physics that are in these programs where they will actually go off and do their own thing?
Oh, it's already doing that. Mm. Yeah. It's already happening.
Right.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's only as far as the imagination can go, I guess, as to how far it goes. I guess, you know, obviously if there's a war or something like that, it could be slowed down. But I think that we're on this trajectory now where I don't know if anything can stop us. Like, even if, I guess, a World War III or some kind of climate catastrophe, even if there was a climate catastrophe, I still think we would find a way of living on, you know? Yeah. Whether that's, you know, people that have got lots of money living like Elysium in these, you know, like, have you seen that movie Elysium?
No. Is that a good sci-fi one? Is that with the big ring?
Yeah, they live in space.
Off-world, right? Yeah.
A part of me thinks, you know, it's sad to think of, but a part of me thinks that's potentially where we could go as a species, where
it's kind of what Elon's doing.
The rich
doing.
Elite live in complete luxury like gods, you know, and then everyone else just lives like in slums and, you know, fighting each other and this and that. But it's not great, you know, optimistic future, but it's interesting to think about, you know. Like, if you fast forward what's going on at the moment, you know, I'm starting to see some real kind of like the connection between corporations and government and media and how kind of corrupted it is and how kind of like I'm exploring a lot of these themes in my some of my recent work.
I saw some of the recent ones. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm quite fascinated by it. It's super interesting. Like the other day I was looking, there's actually a website you can go to called Wall Street Zen, and you type in, like, you go to this website, you type in Pfizer Inc. into the search, right? Mm. And then it comes up, you go to the ownership tab and you scroll down and then you see who's invested in this company.
Mm.
And it's Vanguard, BlackRock and State Street and some various other ones. You go to Moderna, same thing, same donors.
Yeah.
And Johnson & Johnson. And then you go to a company like Raytheon, you know, like weapons and stuff.
Right.
Same ones. Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street. It's fascinating.
Can you do that on them and see?
You go to the website, you can check it all out. It's all there, you know, all the information's there. And, you know,
my friend Andy Ross was telling me about this. He said there's a doco called Who Owns the World, which I still haven't checked out, that kind of goes into all that. And he said it's very easy access to a very easy information to access as well.
That's right. It's all there. All the information's there.
Yeah.
It's just, I guess, before we were started the podcast, we're talking, it's people don't have time, do they? You know, this is the thing, like they're very busy with their lives and there's so much information overload. There's choice overload. You can't go to the supermarket without thinking, oh, which thing should I buy? There's so much stuff. So people don't have the time to check out these things, you know. Mm. And I guess now the sad thing is that people that look for alternative information get called, you know, like misinformation and all this stuff. And I feel like there's definitely a lot going on there. I like exploring it in my art now too. I want to do a whole series of these things going forward next year. So kind of touched on them a little bit.
Yeah. Would these be animated pieces with more of a kind of a narrative in mind, or just kind of little loaded with like the ones that you've posted, loaded just with things that'll just stimulate you?
Yeah, well, think. Like what I've done previously, just little snippets of stuff, and like no real particular narrative, just like slices of all this stuff put together in a way that kind of it tells a story of stuff, but you know, I can't ever claim to know what's going on in this dark world in the background. I don't know if anyone can really, like, because it's so complicated. And but I want to explore that more, and even do some shows and stuff and projections, and like I've been working with talking to some a guy who runs a gallery, and thinking of doing something late next year, like some kind of like a visual sound show using all this kind of stuff I've built up over the last few years.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Oh, just sampling like news clips and little bits of footage from the virus and, you know, all this stuff. Like, people are sick of it all. You know, we're all so sick of it, but it's still...
It's consuming our lives, though, you know?
Resonates with us. Yeah, it resonates because it's consuming our lives. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I find it also with this podcast, often when I kind of go into coronavirus territory, they end up being much higher listened to episodes.
Yeah.
But it affects my fucking brain. You know?
Yeah, totally.
If I make it all about that, it doesn't do me a huge amount of favours.
Yeah.
Know? And it's, we never it's a get difficult to thing answer, to grapple with.
We never really get to any answers either, do we? You know, it's like... And... We probably never will get to any answers because the powers that be don't want us to get to those answers. So they'll do whatever they can to stop us from finding out those things. But it's certainly interesting. And it's interesting because when the virus first started happening, that was the start of these art pieces that I started doing. And they're kind of like timestamps. You know, it's like the first one is when everything happened and, you know, we all were told that it had come from a wet market and that. And, you know, there's little bits of footage like that in these clips. And then as it's gone on, it's another timestamp like 6 months later. And, yeah, I've had real fun kind of delving into that. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I've had Andy Ross, who's been on this show a bunch of times. He's another digital artist, makes great works. Yep. But I've had, you know, we've...
I know Andy, yeah.
We hang out and talk about these issues a lot. We've got a different perspective, but I mean, there's so much of what he's exactly like what you're talking about that he's kind of said, and just even on a common sense level, can't really find too many flaws in it. I don't agree with every single thing, because but nonetheless, I mean, lab leak theory, for instance, although it's not been proven, it's pretty likely.
It's looking that way.
It's looking like there was a kind of...
And all the funding, like, again, going back and following the money, you know, and following the... Like, you see Fauci and he's funded the EcoHealth Alliance and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of information there. And when you go back and look at some of the stuff that these people have said before the pandemic even happened, is, you know, I'm not sure if you've seen Peter Daszak's interview from, like, 2019.
No, who's Peter Daszak?
He ran the EcoHealth Alliance, so he was getting funding from Fauci and NIH and stuff. And he's like the lead scientist, and he's also on the WHO. And, you know, so listening to his interview before the pandemic even happened, it's like they're actually talking about gain of function research and all this stuff they're doing, and it just kind of, you know, it's shocking, you know, so all this stuff was going on. But like, again, you know, I don't think we're going to find out any answers anytime soon. So, but I find it interesting on an art tip to kind of go down this path and explore these themes and stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, maybe art is the kind of way to address those things, and sometimes it's tongue in cheek, sometimes it's really hard hitting.
I mean, there was
Scotty Marsh, the street artist, muralist, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with his work, but he's done a lot of, I mean, he does a lot of political commentary. He did one probably, I think maybe his best known one was Scott Morrison in a Hawaiian t-shirt with a cocktail with everything on fire around him. It says Merry Crisis. But anyway, he
from one of those conferences they go to, where they've got to dress up in the garb of the local country. Or whatever.
I think it was more because he went on holiday to Hawaii fucking country was on fire.
That's right. I remember that.
But anyway, he did one where he did a, it was Xi Jinping as Winnie the Pooh, and then it had Fauci, but in a Batman. Oh, maybe it wasn't Winnie the Pooh. Maybe I'm getting it all wrong.
Of course
maybe it was Batman, and then Fauci was Robin, and he did this kind of lab leak theory theme one, but it was across the road from the Chinese consulate, I think, in Sydney,
and
got removed the next day.
Oh, really?
Awesome. It's just...
You're right, though. Art gives you it's a different angle to explore these themes.
Yeah.
You know, and if you have a podcast and you're talking about some certain things, you know, YouTube will pick it up and you get kicked off. But
yeah, I've had a few. I've had videos removed.
Yeah.
Two videos removed.
I'm sure you're well familiar with it. Mm. Yeah. Yep. So
not saying anything controversial either.
Yeah. That's right.
I was the magic words,
you know, and the algorithms pick all that stuff up, obviously. Mm. And, you know, there's people looking over it and all that. But I guess art gives you that, a bit more flexibility to kind of, you know, touch on things, whether it's with cynicism or whether it's humor or whether it's dark or something or, you know, all those things.
Totally. Yeah. Awesome. I look forward to seeing what you what you make. Yeah,
I want to go through all the variants. I want to do like a series of variants.
And each work is a different variant.
All the you know, the variants they're going through right now. You know, I want to do. I've already done an epsilon variant. I don't think we've gone through epsilon already. So I don't quite know how that happened. A few of them they've skipped over, but
right.
Just like creating like these really complex viruses in my 3D software, and then mixing it with like video footage of like medical stuff and this and that and drugs getting created and just really fast and chaotic, like sharp, short, chaotic, just encapsulating what we're all going through of like this madness of like information and stuff like,
I mean the 24-hour news cycle, it's just chaotic. It's like, I mean, even like when Donald Trump was in office, it was just everything. I mean, even up until now, but it's just one thing after the other.
Yeah.
There's so much fuckery that we've all got this really, really short memory of what happened 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's right. Totally.
It's like this like informational assault.
And they can manipulate us like that too. If there's a story they don't like, you know, the unholy alliance between the media and corporations and government, if there's something they don't like, they'll just brush over it and what about this story, you know? And everyone's like, you know, just got an attention span of like 0.5 seconds these days. So you'll forget about something and just move on to something else, you know? And we've just got, on a daily basis, we're just bombarded by all this stuff. And yeah, and that's why it's good to remove yourself from it every now and then too. And, you know, listen to some music and have some psychedelics and completely switch off from it. You know, I struggle to switch off from it too, and like everyone else does, but you've really got to, I think. So
you've
got to be proactive in that.
Yeah.
As you have to be proactive with the information that you absorb too. You know, you have to actively get out of bubbles and stuff, and you have to like seek out varying viewpoints constantly, you know, or else, you get stuck in bubbles and ruts and stuff. And
I try to, but it's hard to see your blind spots sometimes, you know.
It sure is.
It's really hard to, and it's not just the echo chamber that you create for yourself through the internet algorithm, it's also your social circle. I think even living in Melbourne would have a huge difference to how other people are viewing this whole situation in Queensland or WA or Darwin. I think a lot of those things, there's bubbles within bubbles, fractal bubbles.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it comes full circle, doesn't it? The fractals.
For me, it's been recently trying to lay off the booze, trying to use the body, and even trying to meditate a bit lately, just trying to go back to the basics of mind, body, soul. Really?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'm much better at it than others. Right now,
I think sometimes you've got to learn the same lesson over and over again, don't you? Like you go through this, you know, revelations, and you become a better person, and then you find yourself a year later back in this spot where you were before, and you didn't realize how you got there, and you've got to learn it again, you know?
Absolutely.
It's the same with a whole stack of stuff too.
Yeah. I just make an effort now to when I get into a really good place, if something's gotten me into a really good place, I mean, one of my main ones would be Ram Dass. I'm not sure if you know of Ram Dass. He's a spiritual teacher, ex-psychedelic enthusiast. Anyway.
Like the Bhagwan.
from what? Tiger King?
No, I think it was... Anyway, go on.
For Osho or something?
Yeah.
But anyway, like that, I just make a massive effort. Like, okay, you know this works, so... make that as like a staple, like
totally
staple that into your memory.
Yeah,
this is something you can go back to, or whether it's some other philosophy or reading, or nature.
Mm-hmm.
Just make a massive effort to cement that in your mind as an anchor point of this works. This gets you out, you know. So
and the older you get, the more you realize what works for you as well. You know, like for me, routine works really well. If I do things in a really routine base, I get a better result with... And that doesn't work with other people. You know, some people, you know, like to be more chaotic with their daily things. And I need routine structure, you know, and it's part of my dedication to my work is kind of works well with that approach, you know.
Yep. At the start of the chat, you mentioned lately NFTs have really kind of been what you're working on.
Yeah.
Was this a massive game changer when, I guess when Beeple kind of made his giant sale? Was that kind of when it all kicked off?
And sure was,
particularly like for digital artists. I mean, you've actually never struggled to play with different formats and figure out places to display your art in very appropriate ways, but I could imagine often digital artists it could be a difficult place to know where your art fits in, where to display it. You know, there are some contemporary galleries that will do digital exhibit and represent digital artists, however far less represented in the fine art contemporary art space than painters, sculptures, physical artists. So anyway, long way of getting around. Has NFTs become, a new way of you being able to sustain your practice? Is this the home that all digital artists have been waiting for?
I think so. Yeah. Mm. Like all my whole digital art career, it's always been, I've always thought about it, you know, I wish there was a way of, you know, making a limited edition copy of this that no one else could have. And I've always thought of it. But, you know, that was years ago. So now this is coming out. It's amazing. I think, like I've always struggled with people copying work and, you know, that's how it used to be. You know, like people just digital stuff is, you know, easy to copy. So I would always guard my high resolution. I still do, like my high resolution pieces with my life kind of thing, you know, don't let them out onto the internet kind of thing. And because people can just copy them and then you can never sell anything because people just... But now with this, you know, it changes it completely and people can actually have a you know, one-off piece of something. So, and not only that, it's now opening up a whole stack of ideas, like people thinking of amazing ways of, you know, maybe you have one thing but there's 10,000 variations of it or like there's all these interesting things you can do with this platform now. You know, it's really opened up this huge scope. And I think when the whole Beeple thing happened, people were thinking that it might just be this bubble and it was like a fad and it'll just go away. But there was like this fad kind of time, but now it's settling into a new kind of frontier of technology, which is super exciting. And a lot of my work now is commissioned pieces. So people who are wanting to set up their own platforms and selling stuff, and they'll commission me to do some art for the platform. So rather than when I first started getting into them at the start of the year, it was like, you've got to get onto these marketplaces or you're stuffed kind of thing. It was like,
right.
You know, the whole Beeple thing happened. And I was like, oh man, I wish I could. I'm too late.
Oh, yeah.
I'm two months too late. You know, now I can't get onto this marketplace because there's like 300 million other people all trying to get on. You know, and so that was frustrating. And you know, I got onto a few of these marketplaces and sold a lot of stuff at first. And then I've now realized that the scope is bigger than that. And there's lots of opportunities for commission work. So.
Great. Yeah.
And that's super exciting because I can just do my own art, you know.
Yeah.
And if people commission me the right way and they say, do what you do best, then they get the best result. And sometimes people, you know, I'll reject jobs where most of the time where it's like, do something this way, you know, like I can't handle it, you know.
Yeah.
I can do a little bit of commercial stuff like that, but it's a struggle.
It's really difficult to work with others. I mean, that's the difference between design and art, isn't it? And to really refine an image based on someone else's guidelines who isn't a creative.
Yeah.
It is hard to make something that
it's
hard to look at a work and be like, this is what I want.
Unless it's a collaboration between you and another you know, a musician or something, and they have some ideas or like some of that kind of stuff can work well, you know.
What's the clientele like in the NFT space? Are these people, as far as you know, I imagine you keep an eye on the kind of the space pretty tightly or not? Not really.
Relatively.
Right.
Not, there's a lot going on that I don't know about, you know, there's only so much you can do, you know, but.
I'm just trying to work out whether the average buyer of an NFT is someone who is, well versed in art knowledge, an art collector, for example.
It's or broad. Are they, it's yeah, super okay. broad.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. It ranges from, you know, the kid wanting to collect things like cards and stuff to actual, you know, massive like Sotheby's and stuff, like selling things for bucket loads of money, you know, and everything in between.
Right.
That's what's exciting about it. It's
limitless.
Really is. It's really opened up the scope just so fast as well. You know, it went from this little kind of fad to now being legit so fast. And I think that's the nature of crypto in a way too, you know, like look at where crypto's come, you know, like 10 years ago, Bitcoin was something that people didn't, you know, it was just kind of like, oh, you know, don't put your money in that, you know, you'll lose it or this and that. And now there's like every second day there's a new coins come out and there's a new, you know, infrastructure involved in this coin as well and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, it's things explode and sometimes it's got this exponential feel to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's the nature of technology and yeah.
Do you know how the average person, do you have any insight as to what they do with the NFT, how they display it? Is it...
There's some cool things you can do. Like you can... what I want to try and push with some of these new ones is there's a company that does frames. So they're super thin digital frames and you can Bluetooth it. So you can buy your NFT on your phone or whatever and then you can Bluetooth it to this... to the wall, you know,
right.
using these digital frames. So they're like TV, real flat TVs, I guess, with a little Bluetooth device and a USB attached to it and stuff like that. And
that's pretty futuristic.
Super cool.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
And I've done a recent set of NFTs on the weather, like visualizing weather. And it hasn't been fully explored to its extent yet, but the idea was to create different visualizations of weather and then using real-time data the image changes from, so you know, the storm coming, it's sunny, it's got this sunny abstract kind of sunny picture and then it changes as the storm comes over from real-time data. You know, there's some cool
link it
stuff
to
like
your
that.
Weather app kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sick. That's awesome.
Isn't that a cool idea?
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
It hasn't been quite, it gets a little bit beyond my knowledge, some of this stuff. Like I have found some tutorials on how to use like Python scripting and stuff in order to make these things a reality, but it kind of bamboozles me a little bit. That's the coding side of things, you know, but I will work out how to do it and probably might take might be something that happens next year. So
that's really, really cool. Mm. Just to think about,
totally, you know,
having that many more creatives thinking digitally.
Yeah.
Where that can lead.
You could do linking it with sound too. Like, you know how Shazam, you can use it to just find out what tracks are on and stuff. You could probably use some similar technology to have pictures changing with sound and so, yeah. And again, you know, using data to drive things is super interesting. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on.
Yep.
Mm.
Talking about having art linking to sound and other ways of you like displaying your artwork, you know, I've seen on your website that you have done visualizations for the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, visualizations for Bjork. Amazing, wonderful, how cool. Dreams come true.
But when you're
doing this, and I guess this probably comes down to more the techie side of what you're doing, are you responding in real time? Are the programs taking in the live music and responding?
That's not live. No.
Okay. So this is a collaboration that's done.
Yeah, live requires different software. Sure, live requires, sure. I have delved into this, like software like Touch Designer and Notch, and there's a few programs like that do live stuff. But you have to, they're not great with importing stuff from other software. You've got to kind of generate everything within those programs. But I do want to delve into that. It's totally like up there next year as well on my list of learning stuff. But no, everything I do is pre-recorded, sure. You know. So I'll get the waveform, like I described before, and I'll do stuff to the sound to help me visualize it. And then I'll hand key some bits too to add, you know, so some of it's not activated by sound and some of it is. I'll slow bits down to help and speed it back up again in post and various other things like that to get the result I want. But you know, the live thing is super exciting and that's something I want to delve into.
So you did all that not live, but it was actually presented to live music?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it's all pre-recorded stuff, the Bjork and all that, the concert tours and stuff. It was licensed bird sounds basically. And they played it between interwoven into the concert kind of thing. So
was there any back and forth with Bjork herself?
No,
damn.
I don't. Everyone asks me that. No. I'm the peasant artist.
Yeah. Back in your studio.
I spoke to their production company and stuff, you know. So
yep. Oh, man.
But still, it was great going to the concerts. Yeah, it was so good.
I would have been sick.
Yeah. I remember getting to London and there was like a storm and like this massive concert and feeling really good. And yeah, it was and seeing my work on that scale was really great.
Far out. Mm. Yeah. Have you been to Loom Melbourne?
No.
Have you heard of it?
I have, yeah.
This big, in case anyone doesn't know, it's this new giant exhibition space that's all projectors. I don't know how many projectors they've got in there. They've currently got one on for Vincent Van Gogh.
Yeah, that's Rose that does all that stuff, right? She's been doing. Do you know of her?
No.
Yeah, I think she was telling me about that. Sorry.
Right.
This water.
Yeah. And you know, I've been to the Vincent Van Gogh one, and it's amazing. But I mean, I was just in that space, and I'm like, wonderful, Vincent Van Gogh, whatever. I never know how to say his name. Sorry.
Yeah.
But imagine like some of these incredible visual artists like yourself. Imagine being given an entire.
I've got to get down there.
Yeah. But I mean, that's
where is it again?
It's Jeff's Shed.
Yep.
Exhibition Centre in the city.
Right. But so it's like a pop-up thing. It's not.
I think it's there for a number of years. I think they've got something like I can't remember, but like a 5-year contract or something like that. But I mean, I've got no idea what their curation like, what their plans are in the future. Maybe they've thought about all this, but
yeah,
you know, just some of these visual artists that we actually are so lucky to have on our doorstep, like yourself. I just thought like, as far as the evolution of a digital art exhibition, I mean, that's a very large scale one. but that's where it's at. That is yeah. that is an amazing yeah. way to display digital art.
My work, I was on this upward trajectory, and then the COVID happened, and a lot of stuff got cancelled. So it gave me a few years to kind of just go into my own world and my own studio and just kind of make heaps of art experimentations and create heaps of good stuff. And now it feels like some of these things are definitely going to be worth exploring. And yeah, there's some cool spaces. There's one called Substation too down, I think it's like Western Suburbs, down Williamstown or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that one looks good too. There's some really good spaces.
They've got a projection thing going. Oh, right. Okay, yeah, I'll have to check that out.
I'm not sure if it's a permanent projection space. It's like an old factory that's like an old power station that's been turned into an art gallery. So
They have a art award thing and everything there, right?
I'm not sure.
An art prize? Okay. Substation.
I'm not sure. They probably anyway.
There's
an artist called Royo Akita. Have you heard of him before? Japanese guy?
No.
And he does like using data to present his work, like it is incredible. I saw at Hammer Hall just before the pandemic happened. It was like the last kind of concert that happened before the pandemic, and it's just so incredible. Like he's taking projection and sound art to the next level. It's really worth checking out his stuff.
Will do.
I don't know how to spell.
Royo
Akita. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Super
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. And yeah, also saw your incredible projections at White Night Melbourne, having it on an entire building. I mean, you must always get a massive kick out of seeing it on such a grand scale.
Totally. I was working with these guys, Mind Buffer.
Yeah, I know Mind Buffer.
Josh and Mitch and
I used to be in a studio with Josh.
We did some really good projects together. They're so talented. They're so switched on with their technical stuff, and they've got a really good art and technology brain, you know, like they're really switched on like that. It's a real talent to have those two kind of, you know, I've got a bit of that. I'm quite good with some software, but not to their level, you know. He's doing all this crazy stuff with granular synthesis and all this kind of, super.
What are they working on now? What's their kind of they're what's in their wheelhouse? Thought Josh came back, maybe not, but yeah.
Right.
Cool.
Not
probably
sure.
Probably wrong, but
No, he might be back. I don't know. Yeah. They were in Germany and they were working with some famous German artists. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but
Oh, I'd love to see what they're up to. I mean, have you ever experienced any of Team Lab's stuff? Have you heard of these guys?
No, I think I have though. Yeah.
I mean, I saw most of their stuff in Japan, so I'm pretty sure they're Japanese, but
I think I have, yeah.
Yeah, really, really interactive, just taking the physical and the digital. There's one bit where it's in a giant warehouse. There's this one whole room where it was about below the knee, maybe like shin deep of water, so you have to take off your shoes, and it's all milky. I don't know what they've done to it.
So it's real water.
It's real water. You're walking around, and awesome. They've got all these projectors from the roof down with all these koi fish swimming around. Wow. So it's projection on water that you're in, and it
that's
was
awesome.
Just things like that that are like fucking wow. And you're getting wet. You're feeling, you know, it's physical.
I'm so excited about exploring the sensory realm in the future. You know, like all the senses, like touch and smell, and like having exhibitions that do that, you know, not in a cliched, cheesy way, but in a really kind of a way you might not have thought of before, you know, like that whole thing of visualizing sound and even like smells having colors and stuff like that. Like I like mixing the senses up and exploring that. You know, it's super interesting.
Do you have any are you working on any upcoming projects? I mean, you mentioned the kind of the more the more political commentary with, you know, this shitstorm that we're all going through at the moment. Are you working on any other kind of big anything that's
more
coming
bird up? Sounds I recorded a bird sound the other day, a bowerbird, an incredible sound up at Hillsville Sanctuary. So I've I've got a lyrebird that I recorded a few years ago as well, and I haven't done anything with these yet, so I want to do those as well. So they're on my list. I want to do them justice though. You know, I've been sitting on this lyrebird recording for such a long time, and I haven't done it yet because I just want to do it justice. I've done a snippet of it, but I haven't. It's like a chorus that goes on for like 5 minutes or something. It's all these different birds. It was like 20 different bird sounds that this one bird was making, like mimicking. It was incredible. Yeah. So I want to do that as well. I want to do some painting as well too, get off the computer. I've got a new place and I'm building a studio in it and stuff, and it's going to be a real good spot to do some actual, you know, painting with canvas with oils and stuff. And
you've done some watercolors in the past, right?
A little bit. I've done a little bit of painting stuff, but yeah, I really want to delve into that again.
In your style?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Definitely. Like, probably kind of 3D-ish looking, but, you know, all painted and...
Sick.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
I've got a good setup now where, I can create some stuff on my computers and set them to render, and then I can go off and do some painting, you know. And that's right. What I want. That's right. A groove I want to get into during summer and early next year kind of thing.
Maximizing your time.
Yeah. And getting off the computer a bit too, you know. It feels good to use your hands to create something too, you know, you know what it feels like.
Awesome, man. Hey, dude, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Like I said, I've been a big fan of your stuff for years.
Awesome.
Really at the beginning of my psychedelic awakening is I kind of embedded your work in that period.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And it's so exciting and great to see that you haven't, you know, that you're also not sustaining one spot. You're constantly reinventing your and playing with your inspirations and just breaking free. It's awesome to see. It's very inspiring.
Thanks, man.
Thanks. How do people find you, and how do people check if people want to get your NFTs or anything like that? What's the best place?
Instagram mostly I use these days. Instagram, Andy Thomas Artist. A little bit on Facebook, Andy Thomas Digital Artist, and my website, andythomas.com.au. That's pretty much it. I kind of don't really delve into much other social media stuff. I got onto Twitter a little bit at the start of these NFTs, but I'm not usually in the headspace to deal with that. Mostly Instagram is probably where you can see my latest stuff. So,
sick.
Yep.
Awesome.
Cool.
Nice one. Thank you, man.
Thanks,
really
Jake.
Appreciate it. No worries. Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care.